And in the months since that deadly attack, the seeds of Trump's lie spread across the country.
This bill addresses two fundamental issues.
Republicans in state legislatures planted and fed them.
The confusion that's created when a voter receives duplicate
adopting safeguards that make sure people can have confidence in the outcome. That's always been something I've been committed to.
It requires that all voting systems have a verifiable paper trail.
Drive-through voting didn't work.
Have all senators voted? Have all senators voted?
More than 20 of those bills have become laws restricting how people vote and how votes are counted. One person who's been keeping a tally of these new laws is Michael Waldman. He's president of the Brennan Center for Justice, which advocates for expanded voter access. And I asked him which of these laws stood out as the most restrictive in practice.
Georgia is the most notorious. What they did in Georgia and what we're seeing in other states as well that's particularly dangerous is at the last minute they put in a provision basically changing who would do the counting, taking the Secretary of State out of it, taking County Board of Elections out of it, and putting the right to decide who wins an election in the hands of a very partisan board appointed by the Republican legislature. That turns out to be one of the most dangerous things in 2021, not only restrictions on who can vote, but efforts really to rig who can do the counting.
When you look specifically at limitations on voting by mail, there is some question about whether that actually affects the results. Andrew Hall is with the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research, and he co-authored a recent study about this. Here's what he told us.
We're pretty confident that changing the precise manner by which someone can vote by mail versus vote in person, things of that nature, do not have extremely large effects on overall turnout.
So, Michael Waldman, how meaningful are these restrictions to mail-in voting if, as Hall's study suggests, vote by mail doesn't really mobilize significantly more people?
Well, it's hard to know what the impact going forward of any one bill would be. But in 2020, there was a significant expansion of vote by mail, and the people who were using it for the first time tended to be younger, tended to be more diverse. The restrictions on vote by mail or on early voting that are being pushed don't really affect everybody equally. They're very carefully targeted to affect new voters, younger voters, voters of color. I think it's a mistake and really wrong for us to be thinking, well, you know, people put these obstacles in the way of some voters, in the way of Black voters, in the way of Latino voters. But they can work their way around it. They can organize more and try a little harder, and it all comes out in the end. That's not a really good way to run a democracy.
Could you give us another example or two of how these laws are expected to disproportionately affect non-white voters, Democratic-leaning voters?
Sure. In Georgia, the legislation banned mobile voting sites. Well, that was only used in one place, Atlanta. Legislation in Texas makes sure that younger voters basically can't vote by mail and actually puts penalties on elected officials who try to make it easier for people to vote by mail. Those are examples where these laws look neutral on their face, but they actually have a much bigger impact on some groups than on others, on voters of color more than others. And that's the way it was, unfortunately, throughout much of the country's history. The Jim Crow laws did not say, by and large, oh, Black people can't vote. But they were written in a way and enforced in a way that had that very impact.
So as we've been discussing, some provisions in these state laws limit access to voting. Others actually put the decision of who won in the hands of a partisan appointee or panel. How is that different from steps like narrowing the hours or locations where people can cast a ballot?
A lot of these laws go after who can vote, how they can vote. What's new and especially worrying is the way these new laws go after who does the counting. A lot of Republicans looked at what happened in Georgia, where Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, a Republican, eventually stood up and said, no, you know, Joe Biden won the state. And we remember President Trump called him and tried to bully him into changing the results. Well, the result of that is that the Secretary of State has been cut out of the counting in Georgia. And it is a time-honored, anti-democratic, authoritarian move all over the world and now in the United States to change who can decide who won. It's a very worrisome thing. What we're seeing right now is so many people believe the big lie. And candidates are going to the voters and saying, we're going to make sure that only the Republican can win. If that really happens, and that happens all across the country, that would be a very dangerous moment for our democracy.
And is there also a counter wave of states pushing to expand voter access?
There has been in recent years a very encouraging trend of expanding voter access. And this has been something that people in both political parties have participated in. Automatic voter registration, which would add tens of millions of people to the rolls and improve the accuracy of voter lists. That's something that's now in 17 states and the District of Columbia, and it's been signed into law by Republican and Democratic governors.
Democrats in Congress right now are pushing federal legislation that would expand voting rights. But given that the Supreme Court has already gutted the 1965 Voting Rights Act twice, is there any reason to believe the justices would be more deferential to a new voting law if Congress were able to pass it now?
I think so. You have an extraordinary clash going on right now in the country. All these states are rushing forward with these voter suppression laws. And at the same time, Congress has the power and has the constitutional authority legally and constitutionally to act. And the question is whether Congress has the political will. The legislation called the For the People Act, S1, it relies on the part of the Constitution that says that states set the times, places, and manner of elections, but that Congress and the federal government can override that to protect voters. John Roberts and the Supreme Court have actually pointed to the For the People Act as an example of Congress using its constitutionally legitimate authority. I think both the For the People Act and legislation to strengthen the Voting Rights Act both stand on very strong constitutional ground. Look, the Supreme Court can be very political, but here I think that the law and the Constitution is pretty unambiguous.
Michael Waldman is president of the Brennan Center for Justice. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And tomorrow we'll hear about the Supreme Court decision that paved the way for states to pass restrictive voting laws.